Well, good Wednesday morning. This is June the 3rd, and this is our morning Bible study. Today we are looking at the death of Saul, which of course is 1 Samuel chapter 31, 1 Samuel chapter 31. So if you have your Bibles or your phones or your device or whatever you want to use, go ahead and pause the audio, read 1 Samuel chapter 31. It's a short chapter, and then we're going to dive right into the text. So go ahead and pause. Okay, so looking here at the material that we have 1 Samuel chapter 31, and like I said yesterday, and I spent a fair amount of time talking about this yesterday, what we see in 1 Samuel and going into 2 Samuel, because they were originally one book, is that in this portion we have a lot of flashbacks. We have flashing, maybe not flashback, but scene changes. We're flashing from scene to scene between David and Saul. And what this is doing is this is allowing us to make a comparison and a contrast between the growing kingship, the growing kingdom of David, and the declining dynasty of Saul, the Saulite dynasty. And as I said, we are going to see, we're going to continue to see Saul and his dynasty all the way in several chapters into 2 Samuel. So this flashing back and forth, this scene changing from David to Saul continues into 2 Samuel. And so what we see is we've just seen David, and again, I mentioned this yesterday, we've just seen David be able to deliver his children from foreign invaders. But now we're going to see that Saul is unable to deliver his sons from foreign invaders. And this was, of course, warned in chapter 28 by the witch of Endor. So looking at our material, of course, this is not very difficult to do our W's here. So let's just go ahead and do our W's. And we have, you know, who is in the story? Well, we have the Philistines. We have Israel. We have Saul, and we have Saul's sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Melchishua. And we have the armor bearer, and that is pretty much who's here right now. So that's our who. Where is this happening? This is happening at Mount Gilboa, which is near Jezreel. Then we have our when. When is this happening? Well, this is happening, like we said, we're not exactly sure how the timeline fits, going back to chapter 28, because we're flashing back and forth, and we have events in David's camp that are happening over, I mean, at least one, two, three, at least over 4 days. And then we have later, we're going to have somebody, a runner, who comes to David after he's there for 2 days. And on the third day, we read in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 2, we read that somebody came who would come from the battle and said that, you know, he had been at the battle and he reported the death of Saul. So the question becomes, you know, timeline-wise, how much of David leaving the Philistine camp was a flashback? You know, like that, because the Philistines had met at one city and then they marched to Jezreel. So how long was it before they had made camp? They had broken camp. That the Philistines had gone to Jezreel. They had set up their camp near Gilboa, and then they fought. Is it possible that that took, you know, several days? I think it is. So, you know, are we looking at things in absolute chronological order? It would seem really difficult for that to happen, because the whoever is speaking to Saul in chapter 28 with the Witch of Endor, that seems to be the day before the battle. That seems to be the day before the battle. So somewhere there has to be a flashback. Anyways, so continuing on, we have our who, we have our where, we have our when. Now the question is, what is going on in the story? What is going on in the story? And of course, it's not difficult to say what is going on in this story. We have the Philistines are fighting a war against the Israelites, and the Philistines are striking them dead. It says the men of Israel fled. We're in verse 1. The men of Israel fled from before the Philistines, and the Philistines were right on Saul and his sons. And this was their plan. I mean, they wanted to go after the king. They wanted to, you know, cut off the head of the snake, and the rest of the snake will flop around a little bit, but then it'll die. Okay? And they struck down, it says, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Melchishua. So three of Saul's sons are dead, and Saul himself was in the middle of the battle. He was there fighting in the press, and archers spotted him and wounded him severely. So Saul is fighting. He's able to hold his own, but he's surrounded. But in the middle of the press, the archers see him, and they decide that they need to kill him, because if they kill him, the battle's over, which of course is what we see when we look at Ahab. You know, when Ahab went to battle with, I think it was King Jehoshaphat, before Ahab dies, you know, Ahab tells King Jehoshaphat, he says, "Hey, you wear your armor and you wear your royal robes. I'm just going to go as a normal captain in the army. And because I'm going to let you be in charge." Yeah, right. Saul was no dummy. Saul knew that people were going to be looking for him. And so he sets up, you know, Jehoshaphat as a patsy but it says that an archer, you know, drew his bow at a random. Dr. McGee says, you know, that archer, he had one arrow left in his quiver, and he just pulled it and just aimed up in the air, didn't even open his eyes, and let it go, and the thing, you know, twirled around, went around trees and turned and it got Ahab. Okay, well, the point is that in battles like this, people did deliberately target kings. Why? Because those were the leaders, and if you kill the king, a lot of times the battle would be over. Well, Saul was wounded really badly, and so he says to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and stab me with it. Otherwise, these uncircumcised people will come and stab me and torture me." I think the NIV says they'll abuse me, but his armor bearer wouldn't do it because the armor bearer was afraid. Why was he afraid? Well, the text doesn't say exactly why he's afraid, but I think what we're supposed to see is that he is afraid, like David was afraid. He was afraid to strike the Lord's anointed. So Saul takes his own sword and falls on it. But when his armor bearer sees that Saul was dead, he also fell on his own sword and died with him. Now, the question is, did Saul actually die from his own sword wounds? Because later, when we get to chapter 2, we're going to have to ask that question. You know, who killed Saul? Did the Philistines kill Saul? Well, it seems like the wounds that Saul had were mortal wounds. So the Philistines can claim they killed Saul because the wounds were mortal. Did Saul kill Saul? Well, he fell on his own sword. That certainly was going to be mortal. But maybe, as Saul says, maybe the story we see in chapter 2 is true, that Saul was in the throes of death, and the foreigner, the Amalekite, does kill him, and he does actually make the final extinguishment or extinction of his life. And so that's possible. So we've got a couple different versions of the death of Saul, and the question is, which one is the true version? You know, so that, and that's what gets really difficult. Which version is the true version? Well, is it the narrative version? Well, sure. It could. I mean, the narrative version is true as far as it goes, but maybe the narrative version omits that there's this foreign Amalekite who does finish him off, because that's part of the dramatic tension. That's part of the narrative of oh gosh, like it was an Amalekite, and this is all Saul's fault because Saul refused to exterminate the Amalekites when he had the chance. And so the reason Saul is actually dead is because there was an Amalekite, or maybe Saul would have died anyways, but there's the shame of being killed by an Amalekite. We don't know. The text is doing something there, and I'm not positive what it is, but of course that's next chapter. That's tomorrow. So Saul, his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all of his men died together that day. Now, when it says all of his men, some people have said that means that all of the Israelites died that day. Well, that's clearly not what's happening, because look at verse 1. The men of Israel fled from the Philistines, and many of them fell dead on Mount Gilboa. Okay, so does that mean everybody died? Well, no. I mean, theoretically, you could say that the men of Israel fled. Everybody fled from the Philistines. Many of them fell dead on Mount Gilboa, and the rest of them died somewhere else by the hands of the Philistines. I think that's a stretch. I don't think that's really what that text means. I think when it says all his men died that day, I think what it means is all of those who were close followers of the king, who were in the king's personal retinue, they died. All of his bodyguard died that day. But we know all of his men didn't die because Abner survived, and a lot of the king's soldiers survived. So even to say that all of his men died together that day is probably just not an incredibly accurate way of describing what that text is saying. I mean, it's possible that's what it means, but I don't know, and it's... Yeah, it just doesn't seem to make the best sense to say that the entire Israelite army died, because that would require certain people not being with the army who most certainly would have been with the army. Abner would have been with the army, okay? he would have. And it certainly doesn't mean that all of Saul's children or grandchildren died that day, because Ish-bosheth didn't die. Ish-bosheth, by the way, who is one of the great chumps of history, we'll be talking about that later, but not all of Saul's son died. So all of his men, I mean, we have to ask, you know, who are all the king's men? Well, all the king's men are probably, in my take, it means all of those who were in his personal bodyguard that day. Abner, the commander-in-chief, was not in his personal bodyguard that day. You know, so this is one of these difficult things in the Bible where we see the word all, and all does not mean all. Like, all does not mean every single person in the universe. All does not mean every single person related to Saul in any way, shape, manner, or form. We have to understand what the context of all is, because all languages, all languages use all in a funny way. Very, very seldom does all mean every single one without exception. It normally means everyone that's being referred to. That's really probably a better understanding of what all means. All means everyone that's being referred to. So, you know, we have to ask, okay, well, if that's the case, then who's being referred to? And once we know who's being referred to, then we can have a fair assessment of who the all is. But like I said, I mean, this really isn't very important. This is not a significant piece of this story. So, moving on. When the men of Israel saw who were in the valley, when the men of Israel who were in the valley and across the Jordan saw the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and occupied them. So this is a major defeat. This is a really significant defeat. Because not only have they lost a battle, not only is the king dead, not only is the flower of Israelite youth dead, but the Philistines have now occupied villages. I mean, this is a major advance from the Philistines. This is a major coup for the Philistines, both in the literal and figurative senses. The next day, when the Philistines came to strip loot from the corpses, they discovered Saul and his three sons lying dead on Mount Gilboa. They cut off Saul's head and stripped him of his armor. They sent messengers to announce the news in the temple of their god, of the temple of their idols, and among the people throughout the surrounding land of the Philistines. They placed Saul's armor in the temple of the Ashtoreths and hung his corpse on the city wall of Beth-shan. So, yeah, the Philistines are very, very happy. They are very, extremely happy that Saul is dead. Because not only have they advanced their people, not only have they captured cities, not only have they provided security for themselves, but now they feel safe and secure, and they're ready to boast. And it's interesting that they spread the news where? In the temple of their idols. This, by the way, this is going back to what we see in the beginning of 1 Samuel. The beginning of 1 Samuel. Remember, Hannah's prayer is the key. Hannah's prayer is the key to understanding 1 Samuel. What happens in Hannah's prayer? She says that God exalts the humble, but the lofty and proud he brings down. This is what God is doing. He's bringing down the lofty and proud. Saul refused to honor Yahweh. He instead goes to a pagan witch. And what happens? He dies, and in his death, His death is proclaimed in the temples of foreign gods, and his armor is put in the temple of a foreign god, and his corpse is hung in a pagan city. I mean, this is, Saul had played with paganism. Saul refused to be the servant of Yahweh. And now he ends up being a servant to these foreign gods, and he's shamed, just like these foreign gods are shameful. So this is not an incidental piece of information. This is a significant piece of information. Okay, when the residents of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all their warriors set out and traveled throughout the night. They took Saul's corpse and the corpses of his sons from the city wall of Beth-shan and went to Jabesh, where they buried him. They took the bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh, and they fasted for 7 days. So, what do we see in this text? Here's our why. Okay, so we've got our who, we've got our where, we got our when, we got our what. Now, what's our why? Why is this story in here? Because this fulfills what God said was going to happen. God said that this was going to happen to Saul. He said that he was going to take the kingship away. He said that he was going to unseat Saul from his position. He said that Saul had grown arrogant and he was going to be brought down. And that's exactly what we see at the beginning of 1 Samuel. Remember what Samuel says to Saul. He says, at one time you were small in your own eyes, but you've become arrogant. And what does Hannah pray? Hannah says in her prayer, I believe it was a divinely inspired prayer. I believe the Holy Spirit spoke through her. I mean, if you want to call that a prophetic utterance, it was a prophetic utterance. I believe it was. And Hannah prays and says that God exalts the humble. He seats them on thrones of honor, but the arrogant and the proud he brings down. And this is exactly what happens. The lesson, the why this story is here is to remind us that God will bring down all of the proud and he will exalt the lofty. That is what's going on in 1 Samuel, is this playing out of God is humbling the proud. He's humbling Saul. He's exalting David. Okay, that's what we see. We see God exalting David and humbling Saul. That's our why. And the lesson is for us is, of course, to be humble, to not be proud, because God exalts the humble, but he brings down the proud. Anyways, that's our study for tomorrow. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I can't wait to study the Bible with you tomorrow on Thursday as we enter 2 Samuel. Woohoo! Yeah, 2 Samuel. Anyways, thank you. God bless. Bye. In closing, as a special treat, Eliza wants to sing a song for you. Go ahead, sweetie.
Jesus was me this sign, for the Bible tells me so. And be wrong day or week, but he is strong. Yes, Jesus bless me. The Bible tells me so.
Thanks, sweetie. Goodbye.
Can I do it?